causa di tutte le persone creative, interessanti e appassionate che ho avuto la possibilità di incontrare. Con tantissime opportunità per imparare tutti gli aspetti della trasmissione e della produzione sonora, essere coinvolti con CJLO è un modo davvero fantastico per farti sentire. Se sei interessato a diventare un volontario con CJLO, invia un'email a volunteer@cjlo.com o fai la domanda su cjlo.com/volunteer.
For CJLO News, I'm Serena Abuljud. Instagram has changed its default setting to suppress the amount of political content that would normally appear in users' feeds. According to Ars Technica's reporting, it seems that Instagram did not immediately notify its users when they made that change. Instead, they limited political content from everyone's feed in February, disclosing in a blog that they don't want to preemptively recommend political content from accounts that users don't follow, so that those platforms remain a great experience for everyone. Meta spokesperson Danny Lever stated that this change does not affect posts from accounts that users already follow. It only affects the system's recommendations, and people can control it if they wish to. To modify this new setting, users can go to Instagram's menu and look for settings and activity in their profiles, where they can update their content preferences. This menu contains an item called political content that they can find under the list of suggested content, which allows them to determine their preferences for whether they want to see more political content or not. The federal NPD's motion to recognize Palestinian statehood passed this last week. Katie Brady has more.
We've seen the complete failure of the international community to stop the unfolding carnage in Gaza. And we are dismayed by the failure of Canada's Liberal government to stand up for what is right, for the rule of international law, for humanity.
Federal NDP member Heather McPherson tabled an Opposition Day motion on Monday, a watered-down version of the motion which called for Canada to recognize Palestinian statehood and called for a ceasefire in Gaza passed this week. But amendments made by the Liberal Party cut several key aspects, including the recognition of statehood and an outright ban on military exports to Israel. The motion isn't legally binding, and it's been met with backlash from within the Liberal caucus. Mount Royal MP Anthony Housefather called the motion anti-Israel, even telling reporters that he's unsure he sees himself with the Liberal Party anymore. Palestinian rights and Muslim groups in Canada have met the news with a range of responses. Some say it's been drastically softened, and others feel it's still a meaningful step. Stephen Brown of the National Council of Canadian Muslims spoke to reporters Tuesday in Ottawa.
Today, many are proud to be Canadian. Because today, to be Canadian means to stand for the application of international law, recognition of all human rights, and the pursuit of justice and peace. Now, why does that matter? I think you heard it from members yesterday, that as Canadians, we expect to stand for human rights. And what is happening in Palestine right now, with the slaughter of thousands of children by the extremist Netanyahu government, stands as a grave threat to our rules-based order and our democratic institutions.
The NDP's Charlie Angus continued to press the issue of military exports in Parliament Tuesday. The news comes the same week that a UN-backed report predicts imminent famine for 1.1 million people in Gaza this spring. Neither Anthony Housefather or Anna Ganey, Liberal MP for NDG, have responded to CJLO's request for comment. In Montreal for CJLO, I'm Katie Brady.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the Tommy John Show is live here on CJLO 1690 AM on a gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous, not a cloud in the sky, Monday, March the 25th. And if you're new to the program, welcome to the Tommy John Show. I am Tommy Lane, where every Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern on CJLO 1690 AM, we discuss everything going on in the world of sports. Everything going on in the world of sports. Not just one sport here, one over there. Everything. Whether it's football, hockey, MMA, you name it. College basketball, which we'll talk about today as it is March. We'll get into that. We'll get into Formula One. We will get into everything because the Tommy John Show covers everything. So if you're new to the program, thank you for listening. And all you have to know is we start the show with a quick news, quick recap of the past week, and we'll get into the main topics going on. So why don't we start off every week, like we do, with a quick little recap of the past week. And boy, did we have a lot going on. We had hockey and basketball in the NHL, NBA going on like crazy. We're finally seeing the playoff push by these teams, and it's getting very, very tight around that wild card spot, so we'll get into that. And also, the most basketball I've watched all year happened this past weekend, and had nothing to do with the NBA. Maybe the four best days of college basketball you can get. The Thursday to Sunday of March Madness opening weekend, and it was special, special, special. So we'll get into the quick scores. We'll start on Saturday. The first 2 days, Thursday and Friday, we had craziness. We had Kentucky losing in the first round. A lot of people pick Kentucky to go to the Final Four and maybe even win a national championship. They lost to Oakland, the 14 seed Oakland, 80-76. We had South Carolina losing to Oregon. We had just absolutely crazy upsets. We had Samford almost beating Kansas. It was nuts. Then, maybe things settled a bit on the weekend. We have a lot of the big boys advancing to the next weekend. We have North Carolina. They demolished Michigan State over the weekend. They're a one seed. They're moving on. Gonzaga hammering Kansas, 89-68. They're moving on to the next weekend. Two seed Arizona. They beat Dayton. They're moving on. Iowa State, the two seed. They're moving on. Tennessee in a great game against Texas. They're a two seed. They're going on. Illinois, three seed, 89-63 over Duquesne. Creighton, in a game that looked like a blowout, actually wasn't, went to double overtime, 86-73 over the Oregon Ducks. Marquette, the two seed, 81-77 over Colorado. And then the biggest blowout of the weekend, the number one seed Purdue, dismantling Utah State, 106-67. They are moving on to the Sweet 16. Duke, people saying this is not the best Duke team. The past years have been better. Doesn't matter. James Madison was no match. 93-55, the Duke Blue Devils move on. The Clemson Tigers, in a bit of a surprise, stopped a furious comeback by Baylor. They take it 72-64. Alabama moves on to the Sweet 16 as a four seed, 72-61. The tournament favorites, they are looking unstoppable. They hammer Northwestern 75-58. They move on to the Sweet 16. The Yale Bulldogs miracle run after beating the SEC champs Auburn falls short last night, 85-57. San Diego State shot the lights out from three. They dismantle the Yale Bulldogs. And in maybe the game of the tournament so far last night, the one seed Houston Cougars and the nine seed Texas A&M Aggies. And that game was unbelievable. On the edge of my seat watching it, was pretty much done at one point. Houston was cruising with about 2 minutes left in the game. They looked like they were going to go to the Sweet 16. But A&M started making shots down the stretch, doing the fouling tactic, which I tried to explain to a bunch of people over the weekend. When you're down a lot, just foul to go to the line. Maybe they'll miss a shot. Who knows? You never know in college basketball. You never know, and that's the beauty. Then, with 1.2 seconds left, Texas A&M got the ball down three, and they had a chance to tie it, and boy, did they make it worth their while.
Race to that corner. Radford, the inbounder, looking, the bounce, Garcia. Like I mentioned, Spiro, whoever gets it, let her rip.
86-86 at the end of regulation. They were down 16 at one point in the second half. They crawl all the way back to tie it at 86, but you got to give the Houston Cougars some credit. They rebounded wonderfully. They move on after a crazy game, 100-95. And I thought once A&M hit that game-tying shot that it was over, that, you know, they're just mentally not there. They had a huge lead. All the momentum's with Texas A&M. But in overtime, they played great, scored 14 points in the overtime, made their free throws down the stretch in overtime. And the Houston Cougars will now have their hands full as they take on the Duke Blue Devils next weekend. Man, you can't beat March Madness. You cannot beat March Madness. It's insane. Auburn losing to Yale, Oakland beating Kentucky. Like, you don't get that. It's the one, if those teams played series, they wouldn't have no chance. But in a one game take all, you never know. You never know. So we'll preview next weekend. We have UConn, the one seed, against the five seed San Diego State. The number two seed Iowa, and then Iowa State, my bad, the Cyclones, against the Illinois Fighting. Man, unbelievable, Illinois. 89-63, they will play Iowa State. That's up on the top part of the bracket. We go down to the bottom, North Carolina, Alabama, Clemson, Arizona, Tennessee, and Creighton. That's going to be an unbelievable game. Purdue, Gonzaga, Duke, and Houston, and NC State and Marquette. A lot, not a lot of Cinderella teams making it to the Sweet 16. We do have NC State. Even though they won the ACC, they were an 11th seed. They are playing their tails off, and they are the lone really surprised team based on their seeding to make it to the Sweet 16. Besides that, 1-5s, 3-2s. A lot of them made it to the second round, but then that magic fairy dust ran out in the second round. So I'm looking forward to this week of college basketball. Tips off Thursday. We got games Thursday, Friday, Elite Eight, Saturday, Sunday, and then next week, the Final Four and the National Championship. In other sports, the NFL, like it always does, leading the way. We have pro days this week for Drake May and Jaden Daniels, the projected number 2 and number 3 overall picks. We'll get into that throughout the show. The Miami Dolphins have made an offer to Odell Beckham Jr., the wide receiver who last played for Baltimore last year. No confirm on if they're talking right now. He wants to play in Miami, join Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Mike McDaniel said that during the meetings this morning, the league mornings, that they have made an offer to him. Sean Payton and the Denver Broncos, highly linked to Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. They have the 12th pick in the draft, but going to need to trade up to have a shot at him. Reports Sean Payton loves him and look out for teams like New England, maybe Arizona, to trade out of their spots to get a haul for McCarthy. Craziness over the weekend in the NBA. Not only did we have crazy performances from Nikola Jokic and other stars, the Boston Celtics locked up the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. That is done. It's already confirmed. They are 11 games up on the Milwaukee Bucks, and they will have home court throughout the postseason. If we head to the Western Conference, the Denver Nuggets on a 3-game winning streak, half a game up on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Minnesota, 1 game back. The Clippers in the 4 seed, 5.5 back of the Nuggets. Nikola Jokic just continuing his dominant play. He is now the heavy favorite to win MVP, right around the minus 600 odds there. And then on Saturday night, he put on an absolute clinic. Or my bad, that was Thursday night. He had just a typical Nikola Jokic dominant performance. And they're going to be tough to beat. As big of a Celtics fan I am, I don't know how we stop Jokic if we get to the NBA Finals. And I'm assuming Denver gets there. But I don't know how you stop him. I really don't. Against the Knicks on Thursday, 30 points, 14 rebounds, 11 assists. Like, it's just hard to stop him. It really is. Heavy favorite to win MVP right now. We head to the NHL, and the Montreal Canadiens got a huge win last night, destroying the Seattle Kraken 5-1. Two goals for no calm rookie, first-year Habs player Alex Newhook finally setting into his role on the second line. 2 goals for him, 3 points for Caden Gooley, the defenseman who's playing outstanding, a goal and an assist for Nick Suzuki. And the Canadiens haven't had a win in a while. They get a good one against Seattle on the road. They will play the Colorado Avalanche this week, which won't be too fun. The Carolina Hurricanes 2-1 over the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Edmonton Oilers out in Ottawa. They lose 5-3, but Zach Hyman gets his 50th goal of the season. His first time, obviously, ever hitting 50 goals. Connor McDavid, 2 assists in the loss. And now is only 6 points back on Nikita Kucherov for the league lead and 5 points back Nathan MacKinnon, who's in second place. And it's a three-horse race for the Art Ross. You look at the Hart Trophy Memorial odds, and it's Nathan MacKinnon's to lose right now. He is safely at, like, minus 200. And it's really, really interesting to see what's going on because McDavid, who was down and out in the Art Ross race, how bad the Oilers were playing, he's been unbelievable. He's trying to get 100 assists. I know they lost last night, but he's getting 2 points a night now, 3 points a night, and he is just shot up the leaderboard on points. It's insane. He's third already, and he hasn't even played. He's played much better in the last 3 months, but at one point, he was like not even registering on the top 25, top 30. He was down and out. He was way behind Kucherov and MacKinnon. Now he's within striking distance, trying to get another Art Ross trophy. We head to the standings. The Florida Panthers and the Boston Bruins dead even on 97 points for the first place in the Atlantic. Toronto at 89 points, 8 back of them. They do have 2 games in hand, but they're running out of games. Tampa Bay Lightning at 85 points, and they're in a battle for the wildcard spot. Safely in it right now, thanks to the poor play of Detroit recently. They're 3-7 in their last 10. The New York Rangers leading the way in the Metropolitan by only 1 point over the Carolina Hurricanes, 98 and 97 points respectively. The Philadelphia Flyers hold the last Metropolitan spot, but they're clinging on right now because the Washington Capitals are 7-3 in their last 10. They are only 2 points back of Philadelphia, and it's really getting tight right now in the Eastern Conference. You head out west, Colorado and Dallas, dead even on 97 points. Colorado does have 1 game in hand. They've won, yes, 9 in a row out in Colorado. 9 in a row, and it's still hard to pick up ground because Dallas is 8-2 in their last 10 on a 4-game winning streak. Those teams are on fire. Right behind them, though, the Winnipeg Jets on 93 points. They're on a bit of a slide right now, losing 3 in a row, but still firmly in that third spot. And, man, they're unfortunately for them, it looks like they're going to go on the road and play a series against Dallas or Colorado. We head to the Pacific, and it's once again, Vancouver leading the way, 7-2-1 in their last 10. They've, after a little slow start post the All-Star break, Edmonton was looking to pounce right on them. Not happening. Vancouver playing great post the All-Star break. That little 2-week run of bad play, people were like, oh, they should trade Lindholm, they should do this. Nonsense. Vancouver, 3 wins in a row, 98 points. Vancouver safely as the 1 seed. Edmonton, 3 points up, despite being on a 2-game losing streak up on L.A. L.A. is on 85 points. 1-3 in a row, though. Pierre-Luc Dubois playing better. That's why they signed him. But it's going to come down to probably Edmonton-L.A. and poor Vancouver. It's possible that they have to play Vegas in the first round. Imagine getting 120 points, 115 points. Hey, here's the defending Stanley Cup champions when healthy. Oh, boy. Vegas on 83 points in the wildcard spot along with Nashville, who just seem to get a point every night, 8-0-2 in their last 10. 5 wins in a row. UC Saros, my God, he's an unbelievable goaltender. That's our NHL rundown. We're going to get into a quick break and come back and talk a little bit of March Madness as well as what we thought of the coaches' meetings down in the U.S. for the NFL. We'll talk about that. And the 14-team college football playoff that's about to be approved for a few years down the road. I am Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Bone Sound is proud to present Shada Hayes. Discover the country folk of singer-songwriter Shada Hayes with Kindergarten Heart, an album as fun as it is profound. Available now on CD and colored vinyl. Shada Hayes will perform at Le Ministère on April 4th for the Kindergarten Heart record release show, sharing stage with her band and surprise guests. Tickets are on sale now. For more information and for all tour dates, go to bonesound.com.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount.
And half the iconic sounds of cinema? Well, tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 a.m. with your host, Remy.
Here on the Tommy John Show. Unbelievable weekend for sports. March, that week of March Madness, there's nothing quite like it. It's really amazing. My team, they picked for a national championship, still in it, North Carolina, but I did take a huge hit with Kentucky. I had Kentucky going very far from my team representing. I forget what quarter it is, the West? I forget what quarter they're in. I had them representing it, and that clearly did not happen. I was in disbelief when, like, honestly, like, Oakland? Like, I know we love to fall in love with the cool pick, the sexy pick in March Madness, because we all like, oh, it's how you go playing into the tournament. Watch out for the teams that are playing really good heading into the tournament. I don't know. We fall into this trap every year. Maybe don't go. UConn's very good. But don't fall into the... We do it every year. And the two teams that I heard that are playing so good heading into the tournament and that are going to make deep runs were Kentucky and Auburn. And if you don't know what happened to them, they aren't playing next weekend. Hell, they weren't even playing this weekend. Kentucky lost to Oakland, and Auburn lost to Yale. Yale. Yes, oh, I'm talking about the Yale in Connecticut. The Ivy League school, that Yale. Unbelievable. When I was making my bracket and going through, hey, like, who do I think has a real chance here? Obviously UConn. Obviously North Carolina. Obviously Purdue. I heard Houston's the one team you got to watch out for. They look a bit iffy, and they did look a bit iffy last night. Needed overtime to get past Texas A&M. But everyone said the dark horses are Auburn and Kentucky. And when you hear Kentucky say, yeah, okay, I can get behind that. Great basketball history. Look at the amount of players in the NBA from Kentucky. They've won national championships. We were not that far removed from Devin Booker and Cat, I think, on that team that went undefeated in the regular season. So, like, we're not that far removed. Having said that, though, I don't know what I was thinking buying into the Auburn stock. They were not good all year. They were okay all year. They were fine, like top four in the SEC. And then they get on a bit of a run, and they win the SEC tournament. And they're the SEC champs. And then, of course, everyone's like, they have all the momentum. They're playing great. And every year I do this. And every year, a lot of people do it. They fall in to these teams that are not good throughout the season, and then they get hot for that little weak tournament in their conference against opponents they know, and then people think they're going to go on a run to a Final Four or to a national championship. And it's usually not the case. Now, Kentucky's a bit different because they did lose in the SEC tournament, but people said, oh, forget that. Who cares? Wait, time out. For Kentucky, it's who cares? Doesn't matter. They weren't into it. But when it was Auburn, this was the most important tournament ever. And looking back on it, I was just fooled. I'm like, oh, yeah, everyone likes Auburn. Gotta love Auburn. And I couldn't believe what I was watching on Friday. I could not believe it. It was so pathetic. What a terrible performance by Auburn. They let Yale... They let Yale. Okay, for Kentucky, though, that guy went off. I'm forgetting his name right now from Oakland. He was not missing threes. And if one team gets hot from three, it's going to be hard to beat in a one-game take-all scenario. Fair. Yale, it's like they ran circles around him. And I had to hear this Auburn coach is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I saw his record. I'm like, okay, he's a good coach. He'll have him ready to play. But it feels like he was hearing it too, how good he was. Because they were not prepared at all for Yale, for an Ivy League school. Could have been Harvard. Could have been Princeton. I don't think it mattered who they were playing. And of course, foolish me thought, maybe Yale's onto something, a little magical run. They played San Diego State last night, and they got their doors blown off. And albeit that San Diego State was just drilling threes from all over the place, I get that. But come on now. San Diego, I know they're in the national championship last year, but this is not the same team. It's not. It's the same program, same jerseys. Same logo, but it's not the same team that was in the national championship last year. That wasn't the team Yale was playing last night. And Yale looked awful. Awful. The game was over after 10 minutes. Trying to watch the game last night, going back and forth between Houston, Texas A&M. Like, oh, we'll check the Yale score. They're getting their doors blown off. I'm like, the game just started. This is who beat Auburn. And I had Auburn going to the Elite Eight. I genuinely thought Auburn could beat UConn. What was I thinking? And I'm not the biggest college basketball fan. There's people down in the U.S. who are obsessed about college basketball and watch game one in October, November until the tournament. And of course, those are the people you listen to in these scenarios when you're like me who just watch the conference championship tournaments and March Madness. Because I find it very hard to get into college basketball because it doesn't really mean much. And apparently, even the committee said so. It doesn't mean that much in November, December. It's really only once you get to February, March that college basketball matters. I'm like, okay, that's when I'll start tuning in. And also, it starts when college football's on, the NFL's on. It's like, no, I'm not watching college basketball. This is the time of year, late February, obviously March, is when you get your college basketball fix. And it's unbelievable. Every year I watch this tournament, I'm like, this is the best tournament. It's unbelievable. But the problem is, I know me and a lot of my friends who don't watch college basketball a lot put our faith in making our picks with these guys, these journalists who watch college basketball all day and analyze it all day and analyze where the recruits go and all that stuff. And all of them loved Auburn and loved Kentucky. The sexy pick. No, some people picked UConn. Some people picked North Carolina. But a lot of them were like, this is Kentucky. And watch Auburn to beat UConn. Watch. Give me a break. I cannot believe it. I'm done with that. I'm done. Now, I know it's March Madness, and you have to pick some upsets, and I did. I had Duquesne over BYU. That worked. I had Michigan State winning in the first round against Mississippi State. That was an upset. Had that one. I had a few upsets that, like, generally worked out. That Nevada one killed me on Saturday. Oh my God, was that terrible. But when you look at it, this is why no one gets the perfect bracket, and it's no one ever will, probably. It's literally in the trillion, quintillions, the odds of you getting it. But people like me and my friends, we have no idea who's playing well at one point in the year and if they're God cold. We just see what they do in the conference championship tournament and then in the March Madness. And Auburn and Kentucky were the teams. And another one I heard about that was Nevada. Watch out for Nevada. Watch out for the Mountain West. Watch out for Utah State. Oh, my God. And of course, I drank the Kool-Aid. Oh, yeah. Watch. Whoever said watch out for Utah State against Purdue needs their... They literally lost by 50. Like, people love to find the sexy pick, the team that can shoot threes, and when they go up against a blue blood program, they love that pick. And in every year I fall for it, I'm like, oh, you know, is UConn really even that good? Oh, is, come on, you're telling me Kentucky's going to win the national championship? Yeah, they are. Yeah, what about UConn? No. This is Auburn, Kentucky written all over it. Well, North Carolina. Maybe North Carolina. But you got to love Auburn. Or Texas A&M. I drank the Texas A&M Kool-Aid. I know they took Houston to the brink yesterday, but everyone had like, oh, watch for A&M to make the Final Four. I'm like, they're a 9 seed. Like, yeah, I know, but they're playing good. They're playing really good. Okay. And it never happens. I'm done. Next year, I'll probably forget, but I'm saying this on air, and I have the archives. I might need to go back and listen a year from now. But I am telling myself, no more. Enough of the sexy picks. Enough of them. I'm done with them. No more Auburns that peak at the right end of the year. No more Texas A&Ms as a 9 seed making the Final Four. Utah State. Oh. Just terrible picks. I'm looking back. I'm like, what am I thinking? Falling into these traps that they all love. Then another one everyone said, the one I'll give my credit for is NC State. I did pick NC State to go far. But the other one was people would just loved. I can't believe it. Everyone said, watch out. The one they all loved, everyone said, watch out for is Wisconsin. They got their doors blown off by James Madison. If you really look at it, like, Florida, God, like Florida, they're big in size. They lose to Colorado. And people saying, don't buy in the Marquette. Marquette's not that good. They're fine. They're in the Sweet 16. Oh, my God. Next year, I can't wait. Because I want my shot at it. I do. I really do. I feel like I'm done reading the analyst, like reading people's cool picks. They always want to be the smartest people in the room. Don't want to go up with the sure answer. These are the same people that wouldn't pick the Chiefs in the playoffs, be like anyone else. The same people who, frankly, just want to be different. Because it is too easy to say, who's going to the Super Bowl? Kansas City. Oh, okay. Who's going to make the Final Four? UConn, North Carolina. Huh, that's not fun. How about Auburn? No, they're playing really well. Texas A&M is playing outstanding basketball. Watch out for Nevada. UAB was another one I heard of. UAB shoot the lights out. I'm like, I pick University of Alabama, Birmingham, going farther than the University of Alabama. It makes no sense. And I'm frankly upset at myself. And the more I talk about it, the more just I can't believe I do that every year. And I think I tell myself every year, no more. No more sexy picks. But I know this time next year, 51 weeks from now, when I'm sitting at my kitchen table with my bracket in front of me and my pen in my hand, I know I'm going to fall in love with some rando team that has no business being my pick. None. But Tommy, pick North Carolina. I know. I picked North Carolina. But it's the damage is done. I picked North Carolina to win the whole thing. But those early rounds, well, Tommy, no one gets them right. I know, but I fall in love with these teams, these 8-9 seeds going to the Final Four. And that doesn't happen. Yeah, you get your upsets early on, like a 5 loses, a 4 loses, maybe a 3, occasionally a 2. But if you look at it, the 1 seeds are going to probably make it to the Sweet 16. The 2 seeds are probably going to make it to the Sweet 16. And then you can go from there. But me, taking Auburn, going to the Elite 8, and Kentucky going to the Final Four. And I know I keep beating myself for Kentucky. People are like, Kentucky's a blue blood in college basketball. It is. But the fact that everyone said they were the lock to like win over UConn was worrying for me, even though UConn's been the best team all year. They said, oh, watch, they'll play well against UConn. Yeah, but they got to get to UConn first. Oh, they're the perfect matchup for UConn. Yeah, but they're not the... I mean, they can't match up against Oakland. So I'm going to watch every second down the stretch of March Madness this weekend. I'm watching. I cannot wait for Duke-Houston. That's going to be an awesome game. San Diego State, if they shoot the way they did against Yale, albeit against Yale, they got another Connecticut team this weekend, the University of Connecticut. That's going to be a much tougher and taller task. But I'm looking forward to it. It's been great entertainment so far. And I do, like, yeah, my bracket was ruined after that Nevada pick. I started off pretty hot. I think it was 6-0 to start. I had BYU losing. I had Michigan State winning. I had, what was the other one I nailed early on? There was a few where I was like, oh my God, I'm 5-for-5, 6-for-6. I was about to send Warren Buffett my transfer info. Transfer me that $1 billion. I had Creighton, Arizona, North Carolina, Illinois, Oregon. So I was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7-0 to start. I had Michigan State over Mississippi State, Duquesne over BYU, which was the weird one. I had Creighton over Akron, Arizona over Long Beach, obviously UNC over Wagner, Illinois over Morehead State, and then I had another upset. I had Oregon over South Carolina. Then Nevada was cruising up like 15 with like 5 minutes left, and they lost. And then that ruined my perfect bracket, and since then I've been a mess. Then that night Kentucky lost. Then the wheels really started to fall off. Then I had Drake going far. Then they lost. And then the sexy pick was Samford over Kansas. Everyone said that's the upset of the tournament. I'm watching First Take, the gambling guy. Oh, Samford will beat Kansas. Put it on the money line. They're like at plus 300 something. They are the pick. And albeit there was a bad call at the end of the game, but that didn't happen. So I'm done trusting these guys for a bit. They never pick the UConns or the North Carolinas. They're saying, no. Like these are teams that can beat them, but they keep forgetting they got to get in the position to beat them first. Which doesn't happen often. I can't. Oh, the Kentucky one killed me. Really did. They were a lock to go to the Final Four. Lock. Auburn. It's gonna. They are the team to beat UConn. And they can go to the Final Four. Watch out. Hey. Watch out for UAB. Watch out for Texas A&M. Watch. Oh, my God. And all those teams don't make the... Samford over Kansas? Kansas' two best players are out. I don't care if their whole starting five's out. That was bonehead on my part to pick Samford over Kansas. And I know Kansas got their doors blown off by Gonzaga, but Gonzaga is a basketball school. Samford. Not Stanford. Samford. What a joke. I cannot believe that. I really... Ugh. I'm disgusted in myself. I don't deserve to do these brackets. I don't. And I know people make far worse picks than I do. I bet there's people who picked BYU to go far and picked, you know, you name it, to go Texas to go far. Okay, I didn't do that. But what I did was pretty bad. That was not a good week of picks. For the first 7, I was 7-for-7. Thought, here we go. The hard part's done now. I like the schedule. Nevada's up 15. Kentucky's playing Oakland. Give me a break. We're chilling. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. We're going to do a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the NFL coaches' meetings and what Odell Beckham Jr. could mean for the Dolphins as they are working on a deal right now. I'm Tommy Lane for Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Got the music in me, baby. Cigarettes after sex. Live in Montreal, X's World Tour. Bell Center, Saturday, August 31st. Get tickets now at evenco.ca. The brand new album, X's, is available everywhere July 12th. For more, visit cigarettesaftersex.com.
Hey, are you looking for an alternative to FM radio playlist? Then tune in to the World Beat News radio program right here on CJLO 1690 AM every Tuesday from noon to 1 p.m. to hear brand new World Beat music from mainly Canadian artists. Call or text at 848-7471. Some say, bureaucrats and education.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So yeah, I'm reminder to self, no more sexy picks in March Madness. Just stick to the formula. Don't be crazy. Pick UConn. Don't pick Auburn. Man. So we're only in March, and the NFL withdrawals are fully here. It's bad. It's been a month and a half since the Super Bowl, and I'm dying. I need some football. But the good news is we have the draft in a month's time or so, give or take. Yeah, around a month's time. And we all know who's going one. Caleb Williams is going one to Chicago. Okay. Washington, you're on the clock. So what's really interesting is they have these coaches' meetings. Don't know if it's in Hawaii or wherever they are. All the coaches are there, and they're answering questions from the media. But the real one that surprised me was, of course, Gerard Mayo, my New England Patriots' new head coach. Because New England's in that weird spot. They know they want a quarterback, but they don't know who Washington's going to take. And that's a problem because they don't want to just take the quarterback Washington's leaving for them. They want to get the one they want. And if they can't get him, it's that awkward phase where you have 10 minutes on the clock and are you going to take Marvin Harrison instead? Or are you going to trade the pick back with Minnesota who wants a quarterback? The whole thing's a mess. Absolute mess. But he held a press. Well, they're sitting at these tables and the journalists walk up to them and stuff. And he was answering questions from the media. And he essentially was saying nothing. Because, which I like, but like, okay, he said, we didn't say, okay, we need a quarterback. He was saying that. But also he was saying, hey, we're not just going to like rush this process. And when he was addressing, hey, like, Bill, why don't you make any, Gerard, why don't you make any big signings in free agency? He's like, oh, like, we're taking it slow. Which I like. I want a proper rebuild, not a rushed rebuild. This was head coach Gerard Mayo earlier today from the coaches' meetings. I don't know, Hawaii, somewhere down south.
Well, good morning. Happy to be here. First time, it's a lot. But I'm excited for the opportunity to speak with you guys and hopefully you guys come out of here with some clarity as far as our strategy is concerned, as far as our team building is concerned. Fire away.
Maybe just start with that. I mean, is there a clarity that you would begin with?
You know, the clarity I will begin with is free agency. Obviously, the media, the fans, everyone wants that big signing. But at the same time, as we continue to put this team together, I think there has to be a process. It has to be a methodical process. And look, when there is a guy that we want to get, the Crabs have already told us, like, they'll spend the money. And I would say offensively this year, we were very picky as far as the players that we were getting. And at the same time, that wasn't really a deep offensive free agent class to even make that type of splash. Now, what I'm saying that, the draft is coming up. There will still be conversations as far as trades and things like that, and guys will be released. So this is a process that's going to go on all the way until after the draft.
Is it frustrating at all to have the conversation of, well, we're going to do a number of things to weaponize the offense and then get to the store and say, well, the shelves aren't really stocked with the things we need?
Yeah, I mean, it is frustrating, but at the same time, I think one of the number one priorities we had was to sign our players back. And I think, you know, it's not a popular pick to sign an offensive lineman to a big deal, but at the same time, he's a critical piece to our team. And look, we want to take care of our own. And I think that was really the strategy going into it. Now, look, we did have targets that we wanted, that it just didn't work out. But when it's all said and done, we want guys that want to be a part of this process, want to be a part of the next chapter in New England history.
Gerard, a lot of people have sort of clung on to your statement about burn some cash. Do you regret that?
No, I don't regret it. Look, I'm a first-year head coach. I didn't mean, like, burn some cash. I know we have a lot of cash to utilize, but we are going to utilize it the right way. We have to be very convicted when we do spend that cash. But ownership has done a good job just letting Elliot and I know that we have the cash to spend. Just try to spend it smart.
Gerard.
Hey.
When you look at your team, do you consider it a four-win team? Or, as Bill Parcells would say, you are what your record says you are?
Yeah, you know, honestly, this team is going to look different than last year's team. Even if you were to look at last year, I would say there were opportunities to win more than four games, and we just fell short. Look, we'll see as the team continues to come together how many wins. I can't give you a prediction on how many wins we'll have, but what I will say is that we'll put a competitive team out there on the field, and look, not only on the field, but also off the field, and that's what we're trying to do here in New England.
So that was New England Patriots head coach Gerard Mayo, and the reason I played that clip is because the past 20 years in New England, albeit there was crazy success, they went to 9 Super Bowls, won 6, had the greatest coach, quarterback ever. Okay, we get that. But there was no transparency for 20 years in that organization. It was always just a leak here and there on what they wanted to do, but people didn't care because they were winning. But the last 3-4 years post-Brady, the Patriots, it's just been the same old, none of the fans knew what was going on. But you just get a leak here and there. You didn't even know if it was real or not because it was like Fort Knox. Nothing came out. And that's not the case anymore. And I think Patriots fans are used to now, like, oh, we're so good, we're the Patriots, and they don't understand what's going on here. The team is nowhere near ready to win right now. I don't care. They heard the Gerard Mayo say we got some money to spend or money to burn, however he said it. Yeah, because we have the most cap space in the league. But like he said, we're not just going to throw that money around for nobody. And he said in that little short clip I showed you, we are not going to spend money for spending's sake. And this off where we needed the help was on offense. It wasn't a great offensive free agency period. And I think Gerard Mayo will be the first one to tell you that this team is probably not going to win the Super Bowl this year. So what's the point? Let me be a non-Patriots fan for a second. The Patriots, if they have learned anything from the last 4 years, post-Tom Brady, it's let's build a team the right way. Not signing veteran guys on minimum deals, plugging them in, thinking they're still the same guy, and that defense can win championships all by themselves. If you have the 2000 Ravens, 85 Bears, I got you. But you can have a good defense and an offense with a defensive coordinator calling the plays. That won't work. And you're not going to win games. You have no skill position players at all. No speed on the outside. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They had nothing. Like, we got excited when we signed Juju Smith-Schuster. He can't play anymore. We get excited when we get Devontae Parker. He's gone. So what we did do, I have to stop saying we, what the Patriots did is they looked at their problems. They said, okay, we're a four-win team. How much, even if we signed everyone, if we signed Calvin Ridley, even if we signed Kirk Cousins, even if we signed everyone, are we going to win the Super Bowl? The answer is no, because the offensive line is not good enough, and the skill position players aren't good enough. And just adding Calvin Ridley and Gabe Davis wouldn't turn the Patriots into some crazy contender. Would they be a borderline playoff team? I don't even know. Maybe they'd be an 8-win, 7-win team. And what's the point of that being in no man's land? What they have now is oodles of cap space for the future, and they have the third pick in the draft. Also, a top-end second-round pick. I don't know if it's 34, 35, right around there. There's going to be teams that want players. And high up in the draft is where the Patriots will be every round. First round, third pick, like I said. Low 30s in the second round. They're going to, every time the new round starts, the Patriots have a draft pick, and teams are going to be calling. And trust me, there's going to be a team that loves a receiver in the fourth round. And they'll be like, hey, like, let's call it to New England. New England will trade back. We'll get picks. We just need players and roster spots. I will give him credit. He says they will play tough, which I'm happy. And I trust me, the players will play it hard for Gerard Mayo. But what I picked out of that little clip is he knows what kind of team the Patriots are. He knows what kind of team it is. And he knows, hey, for the next year or two, we might not be the most competitive. Or we might not be a Super Bowl contender. But we are going to build this thing the right way. You saw they signed veteran quarterback Jacoby Brissett, signed a veteran tight end in Austin Hooper, signed another offensive lineman, re-signed Owenu. They're bringing back pieces, building the culture the right way. And they're not going to rush the process. They're not just going to spend money for money's sake. Just spend it for spending's sake. They're not going to do it. No chance. And it's smart. Next year, you're going to have a crazy amount of free agents. If T. Higgins doesn't get traded, or you just look at next year's free agent pool, it's on offense, it's much stronger than this year's. So why are they going to spend all their money, give huge contracts to players they don't really love? Like, why would they do that? It makes no sense whatsoever at all. Like, you look at next year, Nick Chubb's a free agent. Joe Mixon's a free agent. Najee Harris, Travis Etienne, free agent. Keenan Allen, Justin Jefferson, Mike Williams. Brandon Ayuk's a free agent. Now, a lot of them are going to be brought back, but I'm just saying. Deontay Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins, Zay Jones. These guys are all free agents at the end of the year. So, that's a much stronger pool than this year's when you just had Calvin Ridley and maybe Josh Jacobs. You know, it wasn't even close. So, I like what I heard today. People are like, this is not full throttle. This is not... Because they're not foolish. They're not dumb. We're not beating Buffalo, Miami, in a healthy Jets team this year. No. But if we trade... let's say we trade back with a third pick. We don't love Drake May or Jane Daniels. Trade back, get a haul, and just draft players that will help the team right now. And I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. And I keep hearing that there's five really good quarterbacks in the draft. If Minnesota or Denver are so desperate to get McCarthy in May and the right deals out there, they give you three first-round picks, you take it if you don't love the quarterback. That's the one key. If you're in love with Drake May, you're in love with Jaden Daniels, Elliot Wolf, and Jerod Mayo, okay, take him. Go for it. He is your guy. Fine. Use the third overall pick on him. But do not, under any circumstances, reach on a quarterback you don't like. If it's like, oh, well, we just need a quarterback. No, we don't just need a quarterback. We need everything. We need wide receivers, offensive line. We need secondary. We need a lot of things. But that offensive side of the ball, I don't care who we... I don't care if we signed Patrick Mahomes. If we just had the weapons we have now, we won't be competitive. I keep saying we. Damn it. I like Hunter Henry. I don't mind Austin Hooper bringing him in. Antonio Gibson's a decent back. Stevenson's a decent back. Okay. We are going to be a 4-5 win team again next year because the defense is really, really good. But we do not reach on something. And if we love Drake May, love Drake May more than anything. He's the next Tom Brady in New England. Okay, I would not play him right away. I would sit him. Jacoby Brissett's been around the league. He's actually learned from Tom Brady. He's learned from other very good quarterbacks. Just let Jacoby Brissett play and let Drake May learn. They said, oh, his footwork's a bit all. Okay, well, like, let him work on his footwork. Let him learn how to read NFL defenses. Take the time. We're not competitive this year. As in competitive, I mean... we're trying to win a championship. We will play teams tough because our defense is very good, and I think the players would play for Jerod Mayo. But that's about it. Do not rush the process. The last thing I wanted to address before the show's out, Odell Beckham Jr., linked to the Miami Dolphins. Odell, he's not the player he was 5 years ago, or even with the Rams before the ACL injury. He's not the same guy. But still, him being a third option would not be terrible. Here is Ian Rappaport discussing what's going on with Odell Beckham Jr.
Non-quarterback news, Mike McDaniel, the Miami Dolphins head coach, confirming that Odell Beckham Jr. did in fact have an offer from the Dolphins after his visit, which certainly is interesting, but you would also say if he has an offer and he has not accepted it yet, perhaps the offer is not exactly what he wants, perhaps it's a little lower, you would think, than what he wants. And then the question would be, what is the timeline here? Is this one of those things you get to right before the draft and they say, you know what, we need a decision or we need to draft one? Odell has made us wait just like Clowney for basically the last 5 years. So I'm sure he's going to make us wait as long as humanly possible.
So Odell Beckham Jr., not signing yet, but a deal has been out there. And if I was him, I'd take that deal. I mean, you'd be the third receiver on the team, get good matchups. You have Tyreek out of you and Jalen Waddle out of you. I'd take it. Great show today. We'll be back next week. We'll talk about the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight of March Madness, as well as more NFL draft talk. I am Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. CJLO.